Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's June 7th, 2013. You're listening to the best, longest-running PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long, friend of Chad Holloway.
Hey, I've lost huge pots to Chad Holloway. Who's his better friend?
You know, I just like this interview to be able to say, hey, you know, I'm friends with a World Series of Poker bracelet winner.
That's right. That's
even right. Though I've only met Chad once, but, you know, we hit it off right away.
That's right. You know, and it's funny, too, because, you know, for those who don't know, our Ante Up ambassador from Wisconsin, Chad Holloway, he won the event number one, the Casino Employees event, at the World Series this year. Great, great photo of him and all of his fellow media poker news guys just totally surrounding him in the celebration and stuff. And, you know, when I found out that he finally had won, because we had obviously built it up with Twitter and everything else saying he's at the final table, and is that the same Chad Holloway? And you're like, yeah, it is. And so when he finally won, I sent him this nice email. It was like, hey, man, so proud of you. Congratulations, you know. But just know that this doesn't allow you any special favors with us. Your column is still due Friday. And he's like, I know, sir. I will have it in, you know. And blah, blah, blah. But we went back and forth a couple times. And, oh, my God. Just I know he's always been a really good player, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he has been.
Yeah, but, wow. It's just awesome to one of our friends to win a bracelet, you know. It's another one of our friends to win a bracelet. It's just great.
Yeah, and he won our cruise tournament a couple cruises ago.
Yep.
On board. And he's like, hey, do you mind if I send those results to Hendon Mom? Like, I never thought about that. But he did. So now when people go to see Chad Holloway's Hendon Mom page, they're going to see Ante Up Cruise Champion, and then in smaller type, World Series of Poker bracelet win. And that's going to be pretty cool, I think. But no, it's great. I mean, he's his real job is a poker news senior editor. He does a lot of that traveling around and a lot of live updating. He's really good at that. So I'm guessing that's how he became a quote unquote casino employee. Yeah. We have to look into the rules on that, and I might have to go out there and try to dethrone him next year. But yeah, very exciting for him. And you know, he's a Facebook friend too, right? So, and I know you're not on Facebook, so you're not going to really get this, but you know, part of this whole let's squeeze every dollar we can out of Facebook users thing going on now. When there's a happy moment in one of your Facebook friends, whether birthday, anniversary, or apparently winning a World Series poker bracelet, Facebook suggests that you give them something. And you can buy it directly off of the Facebook site. So when I saw Chad's photo, and they're like, give Chad a $25 Olive Garden gift certificate. And so I had to laugh for a while. I'm like, you know what? Because, you know, when I win the World Series poker bracelet, $86,000, you know, the one thing that I just don't think I can shower myself with is a night out at the Olive Garden.
Well, you know what? Facebook should have had an algorithm written there that said, oh, wait, he won a bunch of money? He should give his friends.
That was going to be the other thing I was going to say is, hey, they should be able to notice, hey, wait a minute, this guy won $86,000. So they should be on his page saying, hey, why don't you buy an Olive Garden gift certificate for everybody in Facebook?
Hey, how about sharing the wealth?
Exactly, right? Why am I giving him something else? He's got $86,000 and some bling. He doesn't need anything else from me.
You know,
congratulations. That should be good enough, right?
When I hear stuff like this, I often think of the movie The Social Network and how, you know, the founders of Facebook are sitting around and they're like, no, it's too cool. We can't have ads. It's cool. It's got to stay cool. And I think about this stuff, and I'm like, yeah, that's real cool. Blatantly telling them, hey, buy something through us to celebrate their occasion. Just drives me crazy.
Well, you know, I read a story a couple days ago about, I forget who the executive was, company he came for that brought this idea to Facebook, and I think actually Facebook might have bought his company, and so it's actually very ingenious. You're right, it's not the founder's vision, but at some point they need to make money, and I mean, they make it convenient, you know, happy birthday, give them a $25 gift card from Starbucks, click. So I'm sure it adds
that's
up.
True. That's true.
Sorry, Chad, no Olive Garden for you. You're going to have to suffer through the $14 slice of pizza that Rio sells.
But very excited for him, very happy for him, and I can't wait to see him again to shake his hand and hear some of his stories. Pretty cool.
All right, well, next week, buddy, it's our 8th anniversary of the Antioch PokerCast. Can you believe that?
Good Lord, 8 years? It's almost a decade.
Almost a decade.
God.
It's dog years. It's a lot of decades. You know, I was reading another story the other day. I'm actually very learned. And it said the whole 7 year dog years, that's a big fallacy. I never knew that.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, I assumed it was the rate of which it became an adult that they so fast that they grow that fast. But yeah.
Yeah.
I guess.
All right. But anyhow, in people years, we will be 8 year old.
Man.
Next week. And, you know, we were talking this week. We've obviously, we said this a number of times on the show, we've come a long way since that, in my opinion, truly putrid 5-minute effort that we launched with, that we recorded and did 6 or 7 takes next to the St. Petersburg Times break room microwave.
Ding.
And our producer, our first one on that, he's in Minneapolis now, and when I was up there, he wanted to get together, we just couldn't work it out, but that's kind of a little blast from the past, but we've come a long way, right? And over the years, obviously, the show's evolved. It's not 5 minutes now. It's 500 minutes every week. And we added a bunch of new features and stuff. And, you know, maybe it's time that we take another look at the show and see if we can make it better some by addition or subtraction or multiplication or division or whatever it is and make the show a little bit better.
Yeah, you know, maybe we want to streamline it, maybe we want to eliminate stuff, we don't know, but we're starting to give some thought to it, and we're probably going to start making some changes, just like we had before. I think we made changes when we first came over from the Times to our own product, and then we made some changes a little bit into that, too, but it's been a good long time since we've really tinkered with this format, so, you know, we're going to make some changes, but we want to hear what you have to say as well, see what you like best, and see what you may suggest, and maybe we'll incorporate it into the show as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Let us know what we should keep, what we should get rid of, what we should do differently. This is kind of our poor man's focus group.
Yeah, yeah.
Can't afford to go out and get Price Cooper Waterhouse or whatever they're called to...
Price Cooper Waterhouse.
Survey for us. So we're going to do it old school. So send us an email, podcast@antiochmagazine.com. Call our hotline at 813-448-1120. Post on our Facebook or Twitter pages and the forum at antiochmagazine.com/forum.
Whew. Man.
We really need a better way for people to communicate to us.
Yeah, oh my goodness. We don't have enough ways for them to reach out and give us guff. But we do have a mailbag this week.
We do.
Something we'd like to talk about. John Ross says, do you know of any specific paths to follow to get a sponsorship for poker? And I know of one right away. You have to pull off a Chad Holloway moment and make the final table of a major event that's going to be on TV, and you will have sponsors swarming you like hungry bees around a dozen roses. Because these guys, as soon as they know that you're going to be on the coverage for a long time, they're going to give you a bunch of patches and money and whatever it is that they want to make sure that you spread while you're on TV. So that is a quick way to do it, but I'm sure that's not what you're counting
easy
on. It's not an easy way, exactly.
You know what I told John is, I didn't tell him this, but leading up to what I told John, you know, we get this question quite often. Actually, it's usually, hey, will Andy help send me a patch, and if you buy me into a bunch of tournaments, I'll wear it. And I'll be like, you know, hey, thanks, but we're not your personal piggy bank here. I appreciate that you are trying to get our brand out there, but wearing a patch in a tournament that has no media coverage whatsoever is not going to be worth the $500 buy-in for your tournament. So the first thing I think anybody that's looking for this is to put themselves in the shoes of the person that are asking for the sponsorship from.
Right.
What am I bringing to this company that's worth them giving me what I'm asking them to do? So if you could come up with a really good way of doing that that makes sense for that company's business model, that is actually a very specific path. Now, the problem is I don't think there's a big disconnect in those two things, right? Hmm. I go back to that first example. Well, where'd you patch? Isn't that good enough? Well, no, it's not. So the bottom line is you need to look for tournaments where there's a lot of media exposure. You need to be a player that's good enough to get to the point where you get that media exposure. And, you know, it doesn't hurt if you're a character, you know, that it draws even more media exposure. But, you know, the one overarching thing in all that, Chris, media exposure.
Now, there are little sort of shoots off of that that might work as well. You know, take, for instance, Blue Shark Optics. They have a lot of people who are representatives of them because what he's asking you to do is to wear the product at the table. If you play a lot, then a lot of people are going to see that product on your head, and they may buy it. And that's something tangible where he can get sales from that, because you can literally just sell the – go into your car, grab the optics and bring them back and sell them to them and then whatever. But with us – you know, it depends on who you're asking to be your sponsor. With us, if you're wearing a patch that says AntiUpMagazine.com, yeah, it's nice to spread our word, but there's no tangible revenue that's coming from that for us. So for us to, you know, put out 500 or 1,000 or whatever it is for the entrance that you want to do or whatever, it's just there's just not enough way to track that. But something like a product, they can track it. You can say, okay, I'll give you a 3-month deal where you can wear my sunglasses or my optics for free. But, you know, at the end of that 3 months, if you haven't sold enough to cover what I'm giving you or whatever, then we have to revisit it or something like that. I'm not talking about his business model. I don't know what his business model right. is. But so that's another thing, too, is if you want a sponsorship of somebody who's doing a poker product that you can wear and prove that you can offer a lot of exposure, given that you're playing in numerous tournaments and 8 hours a day in a poker room where you know you'll be seen by 1,000 people a day or, you know, something like that. That's another way to go at it. But you have to pick the right sponsor who's selling the right product that you have to get behind or whatever. I mean, you see a lot of these clothing companies doing that as well. So, you know, it's something to consider too. But like Scott said, really, if it's you're looking for the big bucks and from the big websites or something like that, it has to be a lot of media exposure, and you have to be a good player and know that you're going to get a lot of exposure.
Well, yeah, and understand, too, that Black Friday told these sponsorship deals. Yeah. I mean, there's just not any money really circulating anymore. So, you know, those big Patch City things that we saw before Black Friday don't exist anymore. But I thought you gave a good piece of advice, and I kind of suggest that to John as well, too, is, you know, another specific path is to, you know, look for an up-and-coming company, a startup, somebody has a new app, a new poker training or whatever, and, you know, essentially become a representative of it. Think of it that way, you know, in terms of not just representing the company, but also selling it. And again, that gets back to what I said, put yourself in the shoes of the company and what you can do to make it worth their while. At the end of the day, though, all those things, you got to be a decent enough player, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, if you are in a tournament and you're out in level 2 every tournament, you're not in the tournament long enough to actually do any kind of exposure for the company or sell anything. So at the end of the day, first thing to do, become a good player.
That's the specific path you need to take. You could be a good player. We don't know. But we're just saying that is definitely going to get you noticed and get you people talking about you and coming up to you and wanting to meet you and be with you. So that's a good idea.
Thank you so much for the mailbag, John. And we're going to send you an uncut sheet of J-Design playing cards, official playing cards of AntiUp. You can pick up your own decks in the AntiUp store at antiupmagazine.com/shop. And don't forget, he's in the middle of a second attempt of getting Kickstarter.com funding for his new line of cards. So please go to that website, search for J-Design, that's DESJGN, and donate Kickstarter.
Hey, do you know Lee Childs is going to be our onboard pro on the AntiUp Poker Cruise October 20th to the 27th out of New York City?
I had heard a rumor about that.
Yeah, it's true. We got a 7-night cruise sailing to Bermuda. A new stop for AntiUp. Very excited about that. And Lee is going to do his most expansive poker training ever on that cruise. 2 separate tournament and cash game tracks, each with 5 1-hour classes. In December, we're sailing from Tampa, our backyard, to Cozumel and Grand Cayman. Get all the details on both cruises, including how you can win your way on board at Dover Downs, Texas Hold'em Poker Tours, and just announced Wendover Nugget at AnnieUpCruises.com.
Yeah, very nice. I went over on all of our folks in the Salt Lake City area. That gives you a really close place to go to win your way on the on the ship. Yeah. So, hope to see some folks up there win their way on. And don't forget, we've expanded the number of Annie Up logo items available for sale, including jackets, shirts, hats, and more. Consolidated of all of our other shopping items, subscriptions, single copies, cruises, and products from trusted partners into one website at AntiUpMagazine.com/shop.
Scott mentioned Facebook earlier. Are you liking us on Facebook? Please like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. We want to make sure that we get the word out to all of your friends, too, about how the things are going at Annie Up and what's new in the world of poker. Okay, speaking of that, Annie Up News Desk.
Benny Chin, a 32-year-old amateur poker player and restaurant manager, has won one of this year's most anticipated World Series of Poker events, the so-called Millionaire Maker, which guaranteed a $1 million payday to the winner of the $1,000 event.
It's funny you said has won one. You know what I mean? That's what one. It's like one. But yeah, that's incredible. Can you imagine $1 million for $1,000? God.
Yeah, it actually ended up being like $1.1 million. So
one.
So many people in there that they were able to do better than what they were promising on that.
Incredible.
So.
Absolutely incredible. Congrats, Benny. That's pretty cool. Efforts to get online poker regulated on the federal level have begun anew. Woo! With bills introduced by two congressmen, Republican Peter King, always like it when someone's named King representing poker, and Democrat Joe Barton, while Senate supporters seek a Republican outside of Nevada to champion the bill, like the retired John Kyle did. I got a question about that, Scott.
Yes.
Why do we care about someone in the Senate to be a Republican to champion the bill when... Tell me about the process, because I know that the Senate is dominated by people who would probably vote for this anyway. Do we really need the Republican side of it in the Senate?
We do. That's what kind of killed it last time.
Okay, so, explain it to me.
As we've seen in the House, we've got bipartisan support, or at least bipartisan sponsors of the bill.
Okay.
So it looks like, not that any of this is easy, but it's definitely looking easier in the House. Now, in the Senate... Right now, the big supporters of this bill are Harry Reid and Senator Keller, Heller, I'm sorry, from Nevada.
Right.
Reid's a Democrat, Heller's a Republican. So you have sort of bipartisanship there. But the problem is, in that body, from what I understand, is that it's tough for the Republican in Nevada to really break out and get other people around the country to coalesce around this bill, when it looks like this is something that's going to benefit Nevada much more than anywhere else.
Okay.
So the thinking is if you get a Republican senator from, you know, New York, Florida, wherever, then they're going to be able to twist a couple more arms and get enough votes. Because remember, in the Senate, it's not majority. You got to have, it's like a super majority for some of that stuff.
Yeah.
Right? So you need to have a lot of people behind it. So really what they're looking for is charmers.
Okay, so that's the key there, is the supermajority, and that obviously comes from more Republicans on the side of a gaming bill.
Exactly.
Okay, very cool.
We're fingers crossed, again.
Yes, again.
And finally, a man playing poker in a Pennsylvania casino has been arrested for giving police a false name after he spit on a fellow player who had criticized him for not tipping the dealer.
Man, imagine if he pulled a Cosenza and didn't tip the waitress, what would have happened?
Yes, exactly.
You know, we've heard stories of guys getting up and urinating on the dealer and other people and stuff, so this doesn't really surprise me. But so he got arrested for the false name, not the spitting, or for both?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I guess what happened is, so apparently he's playing, he wins a pot, he stiffs the dealer. Dude at the table is like, dude, that's not cool. You're a dude, man. You gotta tip the dealer. And then the guy threw into a frenzy, because he's channeling his favorite camel, spits on the guy. fisticuffs ensue. The guy runs away. The spatter runs away. Of course, you know, you can't escape a casino. And security catches up to him. He admitted, oh, yeah, I totally shared bodily fluids on that guy.
Ew.
So nothing wrong with that. But, oh, yeah, my name is Chris Cosenza. And that's what he gets charged with.
Oh, man. There's got to be something else. They could have added this spitting if the other guy wanted to press charges, probably.
Yes,
right?
Yeah.
I don't know what the charge is, but probably assault.
To me, that's just a story at that point. Like, you know what? That's almost a badge of honor. You know what? I'm the guy that got spat on.
I think it's assault. That would probably be the charge, assault.
Because probably, yes.
We have a friend who had charges pressed against he pressed charges against somebody who crumbled up a piece of paper and threw it at him. So, I mean, if that happens, then... And clearly, spitting on somebody is something you could probably. And I think the charges were like assault or something. So, wow, that's pretty hilarious.
Very interesting.
Yeah, man. Hey, we get to wrap up.
The last it is just tip the DUI.
And the waitress. We get to wrap up on O'Malley's move today. Very exciting stuff. Let's refresh our memories with part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're back at our brand new Dealer's Choice home game. And once again, we find ourselves in the 50-cent, $1 crazy pineapple round. Again, it's a short six-handed table. The end of the gun, a loose passive player, calls the buck with $50 behind. It's to us in the MP with the Ace of Diamonds, Queen of Diamonds, Queen of Hearts. A very good starting hand, we're going to raise, and account for the limper. We've got about $75, and we make it $4 to go. The cutoff folds, but the button calls. The blinds fold, and the under-the-gun calls as well. The button is an aggressive player that likes to speculate. He likes seeing lots of flops, but can release a hand if he feels he's beat. He sits with 100. There's $15 in the pot, and the flop comes the King of Spades, Jack of Diamonds, Seven of Diamonds. Once again, we've got a decision to make, though it isn't very tough. The under-the-gun checks, and we decide to lead. We don't like the king, but we do like the inside straight and flush draws that we've picked up. We bet $10. The button thinks for a while before calling, and the under-the-gun calls as well. The under-the-gun quickly pitches a card into the muck, we release our Queen of Hearts, and the button seems to have an easy decision as well. There's $45 in the pot, we've got about $61, and the turn is the Seven of Hearts. We don't like this, but we can check, since the under-the-gun checks, and surprisingly, we're seeing a river for free. The river brings the Nine of Diamonds. The under-the-gun once again checks, and we decide it's time to fire. We make it $25 to go, and after thinking for only a short minute, the button taps us. The under-the-gun quickly mucks, and it's back to us. What are we going to do?
First of all, I am all for getting value out of hand. I really am. Mm-hmm. But in this case, I think there's just too much hidden danger in poking the bear. Had we checked, I think the amount the button may have wagered would have been less than our whole stack, and this quandary would be less challenging. But he could have just as easily showed regardless, so that's not a big deal, I guess. The bottom line is we really don't know where we are here. I hate stacking myself when I'm in that situation. But that being said, we're looking at betting about 36 to win about 134, you know, plus getting that 36 back. Based on all that, that's some great odds. I can't see how we could fold.
No, if I had more money, I would fold. And it really does feel like this opponent knew what we were calling with, going for a flush or whatever, even a straight, and let us get there when he already hit his boat, and that's why he didn't, you know. So he let us get there, hope, because the only way he's going to get more money out of us is if we actually make a hand that can actually call a bet. So that's what it really feels like. So, but like you said, I agree with you. I just can't fold for the amount of money. He could have a smaller flush. He could have a naked, you know, whatever. What paired the board? I forget now. The seven?
Yeah.
So, seven. I mean, he could have a naked seven now, and who knows, you know. So, I just, you know, it is pineapple. It's crazy. Anything can happen.
It's crazy.
But I just can't fold. Let's see what happens.
Hello again. This was a tough call. We made the nut flush on the river, but it is by far the mortal nuts. What could the button have that would have compelled him to play the hand this way? Could it be something like Ace-King-7, worth a call pre-flop and then lucked into top and bottom pair, turning a boat? Could it be jacks? Maybe it's the king high flush, something like king jack 10 with the king 10 of diamonds. Either way, it's only another 36 to win roughly 130. That's almost 4-1. Could we be good? Well, ready or not, here we come. We toss the 36 in and are flummoxed when our opponent turns over the other two sevens. But it makes sense. He liked seeing flops, flopped bottom set, slow played a draw-heavy board, treating his own hand like a full house draw rather than a made hand in such an action-heavy game. Slow played his turned quads, hoping to set one of us up on the river, and did just that. I just feel so dirty paying off quads like that. Ah, well. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying sometimes quads happen. I hope to see you on the felt.
Yep, about what we thought, right?
Well, I wasn't expecting quads, though. Were you? Was it quads that he made? Yeah, right?
I guess, yes.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that. Holy cow. About,
yeah. Well, yeah, but I mean, the bottom line was we thought at least a boat, right?
Yeah.
But again, as we said, I mean, for the odds we were getting, we really can't fold there. I mean, a number of the hands, O'Malley did list the number of hands there that were plausible. It could have been a smaller flush. It could have been a naked seven, like you mentioned. It could have been, you know, maybe even just a king, you know,
yeah,
that thought that was good just because we slowed down and was stealing. So this wasn't clear cut like some of these are, where you're looking at it like he's got to have a hand that beats me. It just wasn't. So,
right. Yeah, I totally agree. And like I had mentioned before that, you know, the fact that it seemed like he was letting us get there, you know, it seemed obvious to us that he had that hand, but the price was just too good for me to let it go. So very, very good. Just wasn't expecting quads, though. I was expecting, you know, full house. But, yeah, it's always nice when you turn quads and check. Gee, I wonder why you did that.
The NEF Poker Tour World Championship is coming up July 28th to August 3rd at the Hard Rock Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic. Discounted room rates are available for only a few more days. So please visit anteupmagazine.com/world championship for that booking link and lots more details on this tournament series. PokerLifeGear.com, one of the sponsors of this great event, makes a number of products, including hoodies with personalized sleeves. And the winner of our main event will get a special hoodie. Joining us today to tell us more about Poker Life Gear is Leif Oss Carson. Did I get that right, Leif?
Yeah, thanks. How you doing?
All right, I guess I did.
Well, he responded to it, so you must have gotten his last
that
name
works,
right then.
Works. You know, I know I heard these notes. I'm like, hey, I need to ask Leif how to pronounce his name. I totally forgot, so we're live with him then.
Yeah, it's Leif Osterson.
Osterson.
Ah, Leif.
There you
okay,
go.
Wow. I screwed up both of them. Sorry about that, Leif. Well, thanks for joining us nonetheless, and I appreciate it, of your acceptance of my poor pronunciation skills. So, get us started with a brief history of Poker Life Gear and what prompted you to create the company.
All right. Well, I started with creating a sticker for vehicles to show support for our poker lifestyle. So the website PokerLifeSticker.com was founded then to sell stickers similar to Salt Life stickers. And then my logo design got popular, so we decided to put it on a hoodie for myself to wear. And soon after, I started getting interest from both Sarasota Radio and other local stations to support the local poker. So we decided to create PokerLifeNation.com to make a forum for players to talk poker and also to get started in the state. We got a request from a custom hoodie for a girl called Courtney Hogg, and she then asked to follow me on Twitter and her username on the sleeve, and I thought the idea was great, so we started incorporating it into our hoodies. And then we had to make an online store with easy access because a lot of people wanted to get them, and so we created PokerLifeGear.com. I had a friend that died from cancer and wanted to support the cancer research, so we started with a new logo called the Poker Princess. And this logo and any gear sold that is pink, all proceeds now go to cancer research. And we keep nothing, none of the profit from that at all.
Wow, that's great. Well, you know, you kind of led into my next question. You know, you have all these great products, caps, shirts, patches, and the stickers you even mentioned that started the company. But your signature item is the hoodie. Tell us a little bit about the design of it and how players can personalize it, what they need to do.
Okay. Well, we have the standard hoodie, of course, with a PokerLife logo on it, but we created an easy access support request form online where a custom hoodie can be made. And if you want to have follow me on Twitter or a logo, we can do so. You can also request to have any team colors or color combinations on your hoodie to make it specific for you and not just any generic hoodie. And we also invested in an embroidery machine so we now can custom embroider any logo design or name in front of the hoodie to make them personalized. And so no two are really the same. We can customize them a lot with the embroidery as well.
Cool.
Excellent. And I want to talk a little bit more about the logo, too, because it is a very unique logo that you designed for Poker Life Gear. What kind of went into that process?
Well, I was in the biker community in the past, and of course I like the skull designs, so I had to make sure I got both a little bit of that world and a little bit of the font that was going to be easy to put onto a sticker. Well, it turned out the skull with the cards and the dice, of course, and it all really tied into the poker life and how we're living our poker lives.
Excellent. Well, you know, speaking of the hoodie, as we mentioned, the champion of the Antioch Poker Tour World Championship main event will get one. What will be unique about the one you're providing our champion? I know you're designing it ahead of time, right?
Right. I will make a one-of-a-kind unique color combination. Try to tie it in with Antioch. We're going to have the Antioch patches on, of course, the world championship embroidered in the front with the year, etc. on the hoodie. It also has some extra goodies on it, but we'll keep that as a secret until the champion gets it. But it will be one of a kind, and nobody else can get the same hoodie, so it will be a unique hoodie.
So what was it about the Antioch Poker Tour World Championship event that prompted you to become a sponsor?
Well, as I had a previous relationship, of course, with Jason Solomon. And with my friendship, too, and him talking to me, he also explained to me and showed me around on your website and showed me the exposure that comes from Antioch Magazine. So I thought the sponsorship would be a good thing to launch Poker Life Gear through. And I think the Poker Championship was just great for us to be one of the official gears for a championship event.
Well, in addition to the products you make, your website offers a number of other items made by great other companies, including Blue Shark Optics, which is one of our Antioch sponsors as well. How did you decide what companies to partner with on your site?
Well, I'm constantly looking for and to expand and evolve. And with the great personalized gears out there that is now, the fit is great with our name. So Blue Shark Optics, they have their customized glasses. They're very unique in their field. And they have a great fit with us. Heads Up Gear, of course, and they did a unique name and design. I also have Jared's books online, and they recently partnered up with High Roller Clothing. And I think PokerLifeGear.com is a great name and website for us to promote and sell all poker-related gear. I mean, we will partner up with many more companies in years to come, and we hope to become a central hub now for poker gear to be sold. And so the name PokerLifeGear.com, I think, is a good name for all brands that are customized to be on our website.
And you've also had other brands, and you mentioned Princess Gear before and Poker Life Nation. Tell us a little about those as well.
Yeah. Well, PokerLifeNation.com is a forum, blog, gallery, and bulletin board. What I offer is free membership, of course. You can go on there and join the community. Anybody likes to talk about poker and learn new things just on there. It's not as crowded, as busy as many of the big forums. You can post your tournaments or stake it on there for free. And it's always an opening for great new ideas and events in the area, you know. Poker Princess Gear is, like I said earlier, a way to help cancer research. And it's a great logo that I came up with. And I think it would help the cancer research once we get the rolling and selling more of it.
Well, you don't just sell poker apparel. Like most poker entrepreneurs, you're also a player yourself. How much do you get to play? How busy do you keep? And what games do you enjoy to play?
I started playing poker about 3 years ago. I was in a bad motorcycle accident, and it gave me some time on the belt and sit and play poker. And I've been busy. This year alone, I've entered and placed in many WPT tournaments this year, and I've only been playing for 3 years now, but I learned a lot from local pros and friends. I've been staying active in a lot of local tournaments. My favorite game is the No Limit Hold'em. Also favorite Seven Card Stud, which was my first game I started playing. I just recently got into Chinese poker too, but I have not getting too much into that.
Do you play the open face or the regular Chinese?
What's that?
Do you play the open face Chinese or the regular Chinese?
The regular open Chinese. Yeah, the open Chinese one. Yeah, it's just been a little bit here. I've been trying to learn from the local players, but I think it's you've got to concentrate on No Limit Hold'em at this point.
I'm curious too. You said your first game you started playing was Stud. Was that 3 years ago when you started playing poker, or was that a long time ago? When did you start playing Stud? Was that 3 years ago when you started playing?
Well, the Seven Card Stud actually started playing probably 5, 6, 7 years ago, a long time ago. But the No Limit Hold'em became my favorite play once I was in the wheelchair and everything else like that. It just got so big that you couldn't find any stud tables, so you start playing No Limit Hold'em and now become my favorite game, yes.
Yeah, that's what I was asking. It's just there's not too many players that start this late that start with stud. I mean, that's kind of great.
Yeah, I mean, I was playing, like, I'm from Sweden originally, and in Sweden, one of the pastimes when you grow up was to, of course, sit around with the family and play poker, and been doing that since a kid, you know, and then now it just evolved more and more, much due to my accident, of course, because I got a lot of time in the poker room just to keep myself occupied.
All right, well, thanks for joining us, Leif, and before you leave, definitely remind our listeners where they can go to get some of your great gear.
Yeah, we definitely want people to come over to PokerLeftGear.com and support your local players. We do support all the local players by staking them, and all our profits goes directly to the community. Thank you, guys.
Great to have you on.
Terrific, very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Thanks, John.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown.
This is Downtown Chad Brown, and I'm in the studio with Ante Up.
Breaking new ground on the Hand of the Week this week, Chris.
Oh, yeah?
I know you're going to be very excited. This is our very first Hand of the Week with Bitcoin currency. Do you know what Bitcoin is?
No clue whatsoever. I thought it was BitGuru that you were going to say. I didn't know.
No, Bitcoin, and I am always slightly more intelligent than you are on Bitcoin, because I had actually heard about it. Our good friend Gambit deals with it somehow, or he's playing with it, so... But apparently it's a fake online currency, but it's real in the sense that they have a conversion rate and everything. So it's another one of these, like, I don't know. Now I'm like totally losing my nerd card. Second Life thing where you have, you know, a virtual currency that turns into a real currency because people are so into it. Pretty crazy stuff.
I don't get it. So is this fake currency actually worth real money at some point?
It is, yes, because now there's a real value attached to it because so many people are using it. And by so many people, I don't know, it could be 12. But it's enough that there is an actual market for it now.
Okay, so we're not going to confuse ourselves here, though. We're just going to call it, like, real money as we're going through the hand.
Right? Yes, in fact, actually, our Hand of the Week submitter, Andy... you know, he explained all the Bitcoin just in case I was not a nerd and had not heard of it, but I had. And then he said he gave all the conversion rates. So essentially, one Bitcoin is worth about $130 now.
Holy cow.
And it translates to 1,000 Seals chips because he's playing in the Seals with Clubs, which is an online poker room.
Okay.
So you've got the conversion rate of a Bitcoin and real U.S. money and then Seals chips. So all kinds of craziness going on here, right?
Holy cow.
So essentially, this is a one-chip, two-chip, six-max, no-limit hold'em game, which is equivalent to the 13-cent, 26-cent, with $26 max buy-in. But then he's like, I know it gets really confusing with a little smiley face, so we're just going to pretend it's a 1-2 no-limit game.
Yeah, okay, let's do that, okay? I'm totally lost. I'm still lost, but even though you explained it to me.
It would not be nearly as exciting, though, if I didn't mention the whole Bitcoin part, right?
Yeah, no. No, absolutely.
Because how many $1, $2, no limit hands of the week we get?
A ton,
right?
Yeah, everyone.
But now this one's a little special.
All right, so we're playing
for... our first Bitcoin.
We're playing for seals.
Seals and Bitcoins, all kinds of crazy stuff.
Okay, so it's like crowns and pounds and sterling pound, and I don't know. It's all that UK money, too, the way that's all kind of described as two of the same things. I don't know. I'm just trying to delay this hand of the week because I'm afraid that Bitcoin's going to come back and bite me on the hiney. So.
Yeah. You know, another way of looking at it, six Bitcoins get you a slice of pizza at the Rio during the World Series. all right. So our hero says he's new to the table, hasn't played with either the button or the small blind before. One's here. He folds around to the button. Who calls it $2? He has 180 currency in front of him. The small blind with 260 in front of him completes, and we look down at ace of diamonds, four diamonds, and we have $275, so we have everybody covered by a squiggle.
All right. I guess I'll check, right? It's nice to have a suited ace because you're going to be out of position, you know, for the rest of the hand. But you know, you're three-handed, so I mean, I don't really think I want to raise here. I might consider it if I knew the button was like a real passive guy who'd fold for, you know, a raise or something. But if you know, if he's real aggressive, I'm definitely not raising because he may just be trying to trap me here. But it doesn't seem like that. It seems like the button. I mean, I don't know. It's a case for any button that just calls when it's folded them. Yeah, I know it's a cash game and you don't really need to raise, but you usually want to take control of a hand. Since he didn't, maybe they can get away with raising here. You know,
yeah,
but all you're going to get is two bitcoins or whatever. So, you know, two seals. So I don't know. I think I would just limp and see how I hit the flop.
Yeah, what's interesting is I really like the six-handed. For some reason, I play much better six-handed than I do in a full ring.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't figured it out other than I think maybe it forces me to be more aggressive, which is probably my biggest weakness in no limit hold'em is being too tentative. And we're six-handed, you have to be a little bit more aggressive.
Yes.
You're right, it's a little different because it's a cash game and a tournament, and it's almost unheard of with a button just to check or a call there rather than raising a cash game. I don't know. But I'm probably more likely to raise in a cash game because, you know, the blinds come around much more quickly. So even if you are only picking up $3, you know, that's another free round you get. So
yeah, especially six-handed, like you said.
Yeah. So I'd be more inclined to do that. So I do think the button was weird regardless. But I don't really... I mean, I guess I could make a case for raising because you got an ace and it's six-handed and it's suited and it's wheel cards too, so you get a lot of possibilities. But I'd much rather just wrap the table here and see what develops because that keeps our hand hidden.
Yeah, yeah. Let's knuckle the table and see what happens.
All right, go to the flop. It's $5.85 after the rake in the pot. And the flop comes 10 of diamonds, 7 of diamonds, 4 of hearts. So we flop bottom pair with top kicker and the nut flush draw.
Nice flop.
And the small blind immediately leads out for $5.
Ooh. That's weird. Okay, well... I'm not going to just call here. I know I'm always aggressive with my hands, and when I hit my flops hard, I usually bet them hard. But I just feel like there's too many people in this hand. You know, I'd like to get the button out so I have position on the small blind should the small blind choose to call whatever I raise. So I wouldn't mind, you know, raising 3x here just because, you know, if we got it all in somehow or whatever, I don't think I would see it escalate to that at this point, but... If we did, I could totally see myself calling with bottom pair, top kicker, nut flush draw. I mean, there's no way I'm going away from this, so why not build a pot for if I hit my flush? It's good. I may still hit a four or an ace on the turn, too. You never know. I'm trying to figure out what kind of a hand bets out. I mean, it's not like he saw aggression from anyone else, so there's no reason why he couldn't just think if he has 9-10 in the blind and he hits his 10, it's good. There's no reason why he wouldn't bet out to protect
or
his
even
hand.
Be missed it completely, right? I mean, no one's showing any aggression,
right.
And it's six-handed. You know, again, in most hands, no one hits the flop. So, you know, why not take a shot here and you know, he's betting essentially pot, and if no one hit anything, that's an easy $5 he just made.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't mind making it like 13, 15 to go or something, you know, just to really send a message that you better really have a hand here, and if you do, you know, I still have outs. And I've taken control of the hand, and maybe I get the button to fold, so.
Yeah, I definitely like the 3x raise 15 for a couple reasons. I don't really know whether I want to bait a fold. I mean, we got a pair, we got nut flush draw, we got a lot going on. Our hand's hidden, so to some degree, I don't really care whether people fold. But if we do get the button out, that gives us some advantages. You know, allows us maybe to check behind on the turn if we miss and control a little bit. And I really don't think anybody's going to put us on a flush draw by raising. Bottom pair.
Yeah, or the nut flush draw on top of it. You know, yeah. No one's going to think you have the ace of diamonds in your hand because you didn't raise. So, yeah. I mean, the other thing, too, is by raising and sort of thinning the field a little bit here is if you're not letting the, let's say, if you let the button call the $5, if you just call a 5, maybe the button has something like king-queen and... you know, or something of that nature, something that might fit into this hand a little better than our 4, and then they turn a bigger pair than ours, and then, you know, you lose the will to bet on a turn or something, and now you could have gotten that hand out, and your pair of 4s could stand up, because, you know, this a small blind could have something like 8-9, and could be betting their draw too, you know, so, you know, you really want to try to get other hands out, just so that maybe your 4s could stand up. That's more of a stud move than anything in my mind. A lot of people make moves like that in stud where they're trying to get the overcards out to get to the guy who's drawing, knowing that your pair of 4s may be good, knowing that guy's drawing. But you don't want the other guy to, you know, you want to represent a bigger hand than you have to get the smaller hand out. And sure. Then at the end of the hand, you turn over 4s and the guy's like, I folded 10s, you know, or whatever. But that's the whole point of it. And so maybe that's a move you make here too. You want to get that button out if you can and go heads up with this guy.
Yeah, you know, the other thing I like about raising here is, and I love this move, it doesn't happen very often, but when it does, it's so sweet, is raising here, you hit your flush on the turn, and then you check.
And you check, because there's no way you
think you're
raising.
You induce that river bluff, and when you raise, you get them all confused, and they call, and then you turn over the flush, and they're like, you're such an idiot. And I'm like, I am, but I'm a rich idiot. Give me your money. So, yeah, all kinds of reasons to raise here.
Yeah, it's like when you have a medium pair and you miss the flop, but you bet it, and they call not believing you, and then you turn your set and you check. Yeah. I love that.
All right, well, our hero says, well, what kind of hands is the small blind doing this with? We put them on a pretty wide range of draws, top pair hands, 2 pairs, possibly 4-4. I really think it's tough to put him on a range at all. He could be doing this with absolutely anything.
Yeah, it's tough.
We call the button calls.
Yeah, I don't like that. Like I said, you know that you've called, you're giving the button better odds to hit his hand.
We're going to have to hit something to win this now, I think. It's really tough for us to outplay people without showing any aggression there.
Yeah.
All right, $20 in the pot for the turn, which is the ace of hearts. So our board now is 10 of diamonds, 7 diamonds, 4 of hearts, ace of hearts. So we have top and bottom pair. And to be honest, I really don't like the ace. I meant to mention this before we got to this point that there's lots of cards that were going to come here I liked, and I really actually don't like the ace.
No?
Our hand's a little bit better, obviously, but you know, if somebody's got ace-10, ace-7, which is possible, they got us beat. But I'm not really worried about that. I think it makes it harder for us to do some action here now with this ace.
Well... let me ask
now, how do we raise on the flop? I mean, I don't mind it, I guess, but I would rather have seen a different card.
Well, I feel better about my hand, though. I mean,
Yeah.
And I don't know if it really causes us... I mean, you're right. It may cause us action, you know, but again, we don't have anything but a pair of 4s before that ace comes, so maybe we want to just take it down now with a good bet and be happy with the $20 that's in the pot rather than, you know, what if it came like... king of spades, and now, okay, you haven't made your flush, you still only have a pair of 4s, now there's 3 overs to your 4s, and you had all these callers, how confident are you if somebody now bets 30 in the pot? You're really going to call to win, you know what I mean? I know what you're saying, but you know, and you're right, if we're up against like ace-7 or even ace-10, which would make sense about why somebody would come along, but of course ace-10, you would think one of these players would have raised with ace-10, but maybe not, maybe a small blind didn't or something, I don't know.
That's why I pointed that out, right? You know, so
yeah, top pair, well, top kicker. Yeah, could be, could be. So that's scary. That ace is scary, but it's only scary because we're imagining the worst when actually it gave us aces up, and that's pretty good. So I'm gonna raise this guy.
All right. Well, small blind does lead out for $15.
$15. Yeah. Jeez. Yeah, I'm probably gonna make it like 35, 40.
All right.
Because I really do think that our hand is good.
Yeah, again, I really wish we would have raised the flop and got some more money in there.
Yeah. But,
we'll see what happens here. But so our hero says, hey, my hand's looking pretty sweet right now. If he had two pairs, now dominated, and we still have the nut flush draw, even if he has a miracle 4-4. So don't know what the button has, but he probably would have raised the flop with anything two pair plus. We decided to basically just click it back here and raise to 32.
Yeah, I mean that's what you said. That's pretty. Yeah, that's pretty good. You know, I don't think of 4-4 as a miracle here. I'm doing a lot of research into miracles lately, and that's not one of them. But I know what you're saying. Set of fours is tough to beat, but you still have outs to beat them. But yeah, I think 32. That's fine. That should get the button out. And then if the blind calls, well, if we're beat, we still have outs to win. So, but I like raising there again. I really do. I really want to put these people to a test. Of course, I would have done it differently up to this point already. So I don't know what test they're. You know, if we had raised after the flop, would he have still come along? And you know, and now. He bets even more. So what the hell does he have? Now you got to start putting him on a range. You know, it feels like it could be two pair. It could have been tens and sevens. You know, and if he just calls, then that could be what it is. It could be tens and sevens. You know, because he wasn't a blind. You know, Daniel Negreanu's favorite hand is 10-7. So people will play that hand. It's somewhat connected, and you're putting in just a little half a bet to win whatever it is, four or five bets. So. Could be 10-7. Could be two pair, like you said.
All right, so we did raise the 32. The button gets out of the way, and the small blind just calls.
Okay, well, I mean, that, you know, it could be like we just said. It could be two pair, and we have aces up, so I'm happy with it. Yeah, I'm happy with it. Let's see what happens.
All right, so we go to the river with a squiggly 82 in the pot. And it is the ace of clubs. So our final board, 10 of diamonds, 7 diamonds, 4 of hearts, ace of hearts, ace of clubs. We boat up. And the small blind does not slow down and fires $60 at us.
Call. That's all I'm doing. I really am. I'm only calling because we don't have the nuts. And for him to bet out right away, he had to have something. To bet again when the ace came, it didn't even scare him. He had to have something. And to bet again when the two aces come out, his tens and sevens, if he had that, or tens and fours, or fours and sevens, those aren't good. Now, yeah, if he has pocket sevens or pocket fours, okay, we have him beat. We could probably get a bunch of money out of him. But like you mentioned, ace 10. A7. Those are very likely hands for somebody to bet out on that flop. You know, if somebody had ace 10 and it came 10-7-4, I'd bet out, you know, or I might consider betting out. And then on the turn when I make aces up, aces and sevens or aces and tens, I might bet out. Definitely would to protect against the flush draw and now the wheel draw and the straight draw from the 10-7. So I don't think I can raise here. I'm only going to get called or re-raised by ace 10 or ace 7. So why do that? It's exactly. A big enough pot, I think. So I think I'm just calling right away.
Yeah, and you know, really, if I'm the small blind, I mentioned this a couple times already. I've been any flop really there. But certainly if I have a 10, a 7, or even a 4, I'm betting. So the fact that he hasn't slowed down, I mean, really the only slowdown he did was just calling our race, the last one.
Yeah.
The rest of the time, he's been firing, and he's got to have something. If he's got to have something, what can he have on this board that we can beat now?
That's right.
I mean,
only 4-4, 10-4-4-7-7. That's really it. There's no way he's just calling the small blind, half of the small blind, you know, whatever it is, before the flop with pocket tens. He's raising there. So
10-4.
Yeah, 10-4, not really. So really, yeah, like you said, I mean, the only hands that we're beating that we're going to get money out of for by raising is 4-4 and 7-7 and or the other ace-4, you know, but we split it, so we don't get money out of that. So maybe ace-7 is out there, and we lose, and we lose.
Well, yeah,
to it,
and the other thing, too, is if the smaller boats, I mean, again, we, you know, this is a 13-cent, 26-cent Bitcoin table, so the players may not be as sophisticated, but think about what he has to put us on at this point. You know, we raise on the turn. I don't think you could do that without two pair at that point.
Right, and our
so
raise.
If you had two pair on the turn, now we boated up, so if you got pocket sevens and pocket fours, you're behind. And of course, he bet into us too, which you would never do in that case, because you got to think that we got there bigger than you did, so. There's just a whole lot of trouble here, I think.
Yeah. I mean, he could think that we have a naked ace something that didn't pair the other card too. But again, if you had a naked ace something, he's probably thinking you would have raised with ace king, ace queen, ace jack, ace nine in that situation. Maybe ace nine. So he's thinking that the only way that you're going to, you know, you're going to beat him is if you have quad aces, if he has pocket sevens or something, or like that ace 10 or something, if he has pocket fours, pocket seven. So really, I can't advocate anything but a call here. I can't fold, and I don't think I should raise. So,
I could make a case for folding. I think it'd be extremely difficult to do it, but I could make a case. I would say I couldn't do it, but yeah, I think call is the best way to go here.
Yeah.
All right, our hero says, "Wow, our pair of flush draw turned into a third boat on the river, but the small blind leads again for biggish for $60 with about 160 behind." This is a dream scenario if he has 4-4 or 7-7. The only hands we are worried about are ace-10, ace-7. Would he raise ace-10 preflop? Would he donk second pair on the flop? His line is probably most consistent with 4-4, but there's only one possible combo of that. And wouldn't he re-raise the turn on a drawy board? And then the fact that we have one of the four, so those would definitely be case fours, too. You got to think about that, I think.
Yeah.
So he says, the question is, do we shove for value votes? I think we've definitely answered that. Nope. And we shove anyhow. Small blind calls. Tables, ace of spades, 10 of hearts.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is you say, would he donk second pair on the flop? It's not a donk bet because no one raised and showed aggression pre-flop. It's a limped, right. Unraised pot. So he can. It's his to take if he wants. I don't think it's a donk bet. Even if he did have a second pair. He didn't. He had top pair, so... But would he raise ace 10 pre-flop? Probably not, because he's going to be out of position the rest of the hand, and it's just disguised, and it paid off really well to be disguised here. You got all of your money, or whatever the you know, you got whatever you could put in, and he could double through. So
got all your coins.
Yeah, all your bitcoins. So, yeah, your seals got clubbed.
All right, Andy, we appreciate you being the first Bitcoin hand of the week, and we are going to send you a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products from Smapsoft. Don't have to be a winner to enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store, and remember to send your hands of the week to podcast@antiupmagazine.com.
I want to thank Leif Oscarsson for joining us today from PokerLifeGear.com. Looking forward to seeing the championship hoodie. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.